back through the files of the Bunyip. Yes, I'm back after 7 weeks away overseas in Scandinavia on two bus tours and then a cruise up the Rhine and Danube from Amsterdam to Budapest. And it sounds fantastic. And
it was fantastic.
It was better than fantastic. It's just like, I'm just still trying. I've been back a week and I'm still trying to come down to earth. But it's nice to get back into routine. Mm-hmm. And I'm here with Jeanette in the Gawler Heritage Research Centre in the bottom of the Gawler Civic Centre. And hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Kay. It's great to have you back.
Oh, thank you. Right. I'm glad that there were other people that were happy to fill
in.
Yes,
we had a really interesting range of guests to fill in while you were away.
Well, that's good. So, and it's nice to have different voices, we have the two readers. Without further ado, I will kick off with looking back through the files of the Bunyip 150 years ago. Oh, and we're looking at the Bunyip for Wednesday, July 26, 150 years ago. St. Peter and St. Paul's Church, Gawler. A correspondent informs with regret that the recent effort to establish a higher class of Catholic school for advanced scholars has not yet been successful. The present school contains 101 scholars, and though there are five of the sisters engaged in the work of tuition, he says they are heavily taxed as to time, patience, and mental labour. For among so large a number, there are vicious and unruly scholars of the rougher sex, some of whom are utterly beyond female management.
So, I can imagine that would have been a real problem for female teachers.
Advanced school.
Yes.
Advanced scholars. So I'm thinking of more intellectual, which they're just talking about they need more men.
Yes.
To sort of handle. Discipline them.
Well, this is before the education, the first actual introduction of free education into South Australia.
I thought that happened in the 1850s, didn't it?
1875. So actually got some...
Oh, my goodness. So this is, 1873.
Yeah, got some notes I made before I came. So Victoria brought in the first Education Act, which gave free compulsory education in 1872. By 1873 in South Australia, they knew it was coming in. It was still being debated and discussed, and they're going through the fine points.
Oh,
and, of course, the Catholic Church in particular were really concerned about it being purely secular because they believed they needed to have Catholic education and that if, you know, they had to educate their own children and if the other Protestant children got free education and Catholic, so, which is why we ended up having a government-funded private school. But in South Australia, the first government-funded private schools weren't until about mid-20th century. Mm. So it was a lot longer coming in. But that was quite a vicious debate.
Mm.
It got very, very heated and it really went on right through the 19th century. But the first South Australian Education Act, which determined free compulsory education, was 1875 here.
Wow. Okay.
And before that, Central Board of Education was established in 1851 in South Australia.
That's the one I'm thinking
of. That's the one you're thinking of.
Yes.
And that handled, they registered schools and teachers, paid a stipend to head teachers, and students paid fees. It was minimal fee, but there was a fee.
Mm.
And that went to the teachers' income.
That's why.
So they did have to be registered, though.
Yeah. That's why on the goldfields up in Ichunga, where I've done my family history, is they had teachers, registered teachers on the goldfields.
Yes.
Some of them went on to become public education teachers.
And, of course, there were a lot of female teachers, but I didn't realise until I was actually looking this up that married women were able to register and work as teachers.
So they weren't?
They were. I thought they weren't, but they were. So there was plenty of married women working as teachers.
Once they'd had their families, I think that was the thing. They'd had to be widows or they had to be childless.
They didn't have to be widows. They might have had to be childless.
Or their children had grown up. Yeah. Because I know that even when I was a kid, and I was going through school in the 1960s, I started primary school in 1960, so we had teachers then that actually... No, by then it had started to fall by the wayside, but the teachers that had to leave because they got married, I think that sort of fell by the wayside in the 1950s when we had such an influx of people into South Australia. Mm. But it's certainly within my family's living memory of teachers having to resign because they got married.
Yeah. Well, when Mum got married, she was working in the Lands Department, this was in Victoria, and it was expected she would resign as soon as she got married, and her bosses were looking for a replacement, and she just said, no, I'm not resigning. keep working. She kept working for quite a few years. And after all, I got used to it. But she didn't. She wasn't legally obliged to resign.
Just an expectation.
It was an expectation. Yeah.
Social expectation. Those social pressures.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, crazy stuff.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
All for something so basic as education. And
yes. Yeah.
So, anyway, that's 150 years ago.
Yes.
Thank God we've moved on.
Yes. So, to 100 years ago, a condemned property. On Monday evening, the town clerk reported a case of diphtheria on Church Hill, Gawler. In company with the health officer, the premises had been inspected and found to be in a bad state. The inspection revealed that the drains and gutters were choked and the windows out of order, with dampness showing in the walls. The council decided that the house should be condemned and repairs ordered to be carried out right away. And of course, by 100 years ago, diphtheria, there was a vaccine, but it wasn't widely available. It was really just in the very early days of the vaccine being available for diphtheria. And it's one that interests me because partly because of the raging debate now about vaccinations and just with family history. So Justin's grandmother told us when she was dying, when she was a child over in York Peninsula, a neighbouring household had diphtheria in the one of the children had diphtheria, and she was told not to go over there and play, but she disobeyed and went over there and played anyway. And her sister got diphtheria and died, and she carried that on her conscience all her life. And it, I think, you know,
she would do.
Yes, yeah.
Especially, you know, a child carrying that burden. That's a terrible.
It is
terrible thing to know that. Chances are was that she'd carried it back into the house.
Yes, yeah, she almost certainly had, and it was a dreadful knowledge. But also when our first son was born in the mid-90s, I was talking to some people we knew had a child at the same time, and I was talking to the mother and said something about vaccinations. She said, oh, I'm not going to get my son vaccinated. It was the first time I'd actually heard of the anti-vax sort of movement. It was really very new then too. I think it was just getting traction, and I was pretty shocked. And I said, she said, well, I've never even heard of diphtheria, and nor has my doctor. And I just...
A doctor's not heard of diphtheria? Come on.
Yes. And I said, well, take a walk through a cemetery, look at all the infant graves. I remember as a child going through the old part of the cemetery. And
aren't we lucky that we've got to a point where people can think, oh, I've never even heard of diphtheria, why should I have to have it?
But
let alone spill it, you know. Why should I actually put my that poison into my child's system?
But the number of deaths from diphtheria was huge, and it wasn't just the socially disadvantaged. Queen Victoria's second daughter died of diphtheria, as well as her four-year-old daughter. So, you know, right up to royalty, they died of it too. No one was immune.
Same as COVID, no one was immune.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so terrible thing.
Yes. Over to UK for 50 years ago.
50 years ago. Now, here's a real thirst, says the headline, and it's a photograph there, a thumbnail photograph of a camel and a man holding a beer up to the camel's nose. I mean, that's some kind of cruelty, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. The ethics of the story are disturbing.
50 years ago, though, that was what you did.
Yeah. Hmm.
Our photographer has had some tough assignment in his time. But the picture to top them all was snapped in the front bar of the Old Bushman Hotel last Friday. The fact that the principal subject was a camel held no real problems. The dilemma was simply caused by a giant-sized hangover. You see, the camel drank half a bucket of beer for the benefit of the press and television the night before and was quite naturally not looking for another round. So there's the camel, he's turning his nose up.
Yeah.
Oh, so, apparently it must have been a camel that drank beer.
I was really frustrated with that. I would love to know more about the story. But, of course, 50 years ago, it's not up on
the road. It's not digitised. Oh,
so we have to go and sit and read papers to find out more.
Oh, grief. Is that where they got the thirsty camel, perhaps?
Oh, maybe. Maybe it is.
It's a chain, though.
Yeah.
I don't think it's to do with
origins of Gawler. On to 25 years ago. Local train trip. The Bluebird passenger train will make a special local trip through the Barossa Valley to Gawler and return on Sunday, August the 9th. Barossa Regional Economic Development Authority Chief Executive Brian Sincock said this would give local residents an opportunity to see the Barossa from a rail perspective. This is a real bonus for our region and something that could become a more regular event and even a significant additional tourism product if demand is sufficient, said Mr. Sincock. Sadly, it didn't. But
I think it didn't pay for itself.
No, I do remember seeing the steam engine.
Oh, it was great fun. I mean,
and that would have been around 25.
They're a wonderful thing. Where we went, we could, you know, we rode on steam engines and classic railway routes, and it was just wonderful. And they're a great draw card, but I don't think we have the numbers to justify it.
No.
That's the problem.
They are a huge cost, and there's fire risk and all of that.
So 10 years ago, $10,000 to get the clock ticking. Gawler's iconic clock will tick again, but it's going to come at a cost of almost $10,000. According to a Gawler Council report, if the Murray Street clock is to operate again, $9,630 will be required for the clock tower to comply with the Work Health Safety Act. Council has applied for an SA Heritage Fund grant, which will cover half the cost.
I know there was a volunteer who used to look after the clock for years.
What was his name? Orb Kaysler, was it? Something like that. Came from the Barossa Valley. Mm. He and his son were doing it for a long time. Yeah, the legislation with, you know, climbing up to the tower and all of that.
Yes,
probably.
And public liability, which
you know, it's actually quite refreshing to go to other countries that don't have those constraints.
Yes.
Like the most memorable experience he had, and I'm digressing, but I was at North Cape when the weather had changed and we'd had this windstorm coming through with rain in it, and it was about 100 kilometre an hour winds, and they were horizontal, you know, and this is the northernmost tip of of Europe.
Yes.
And we were out there in the wind, and as Anne, who I travelled with, said, in Australia it would have been shut down. You wouldn't have been allowed to go out.
So, and that's it for this week, so thank you very much, Kate.
Thank you, Jeanette. Bye for now.
Bye for now. For all light side.